Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Melissa Miller Douglas. Melissa is a wellness expert. She is a licensed master social worker, and she's a world traveler. And she brings a very unique approach to teaching mindfulness through chocolate. And she does so through one-on-one programs, through small group training programs, and even, as you'll hear her talk about, executive retreats. Her goal is to advance workplace wellness while driving personal and professional growth. And like I said, she's got a very unique approach to doing it, which I think is fantastic. So of all the crazy directions this conversation is going to go, we're going to talk about how chocolate can lead to creating a greater sense of mindfulness and why savoring something heightens our ability to stay present. We're going to talk about the importance of habit stacking. For me, have a super interesting conversation about how she learned to build trust and rapport while supporting schizophrenic patients. And also what she learned about her sense of self that helps her work with others while she sailed alone. It's a great conversation. It took several unexpected twists and turns. She's fantastic. I'm really excited to share this with everybody. So thank you so much for being here for another week. While you're here, please take just a second, share the show, subscribe to the podcast, like the show, give us your feedback. We would really like to hear from you. Thank you for all of that. And also, while you're online, check out our sponsors real quick. Head over to humantel.com, explore their resources and training catalog, and then enter the code INCLUSIVE25 for 25% off their best-in-class online training to recognize when people's emotions are shifting based on changes in their nonverbal communication and their facial expressions. I recommend it. I've done it. For the professional interviewers, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. Get all your questions answered on both the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation and the International Association of Interviewers. All you need to know about both, they're right there at certifiedinterviewer.com. And while you're online, please check out inclusive.com to learn more about the programs our clients ask us to custom facilitate for their senior leaders, sales teams, HR teams, and more to teach them how to increase their ability to maximize their strategic observation and persuasive communication techniques to unlock hidden value in all of their high stakes conversations. We really appreciate you being here for another week. Thank you so much. So now without further ado, I introduce to you, Melissa Miller Douglas. Good morning, Melissa. It is so great to see you again. How are you?
Excellent. It's a good day to have a good day.
As I hope most of them are, but definitely today so far it is. I really appreciate you taking the time to record this conversation. It was fantastic meeting you, and I hope this is okay because I didn't get your permission up front, but I want to share a little bit of my first impression when we first met. So I was standing in front of the room, waiting for the group to arrive, sort of, if we're being completely honest, dealing with a little bit of like the dog and pony show, like how are we setting up the room and where is everything going to go? And so you come in and I knew that there were going to be guests, but I didn't know who the guests were and I didn't know who the members were. I didn't know any of that. So when you walked in and looked around, here I am thinking I'm going to be the helpful guy, right? So when you walked over to the side of the room we weren't going to be on, I tried as polite as I could be to be like, oh, we're actually going to be sitting over here. And as calm as possible, you turned around. You're like, oh, thank you. I work here. I know. I'm like, oh, I'm going to take both feet out of my mouth and I'm going to start this day all over. But you couldn't have been any more polite about it. I was just like, way to go, Mike. Like, you're trying to be helpful and you just made a jerk out of yourself again. And it's 8 a.m, so you're off to an awesome start. But then what I really noticed was as other people were coming into the room, you immediately started playing tour guide. Like, welcome. Have you been here before? Can I help you with anything? Do you need to know where anything is? And there was, I don't know the right way to say it without sounding like more of a jerk than I typically do, but I kind of study people for a living one way or another, whether I like it or not. There was an immediate sense of calm confidence that I recognized from you that I think is very, I don't see it very often. So it's, at least in my observations, it's rare. It wasn't performative. It wasn't covering for anything. It wasn't attention seeking. It was just like calm, in control, confident. I was struck by it immediately. And then maybe an hour later, on a side conversation when I'm just lurking, I hear you talking about what you do. And I was like, oh, now this is starting to make sense. This is starting to add up. And this is a person I need to have a conversation with. So when you expressed your interest, I was like, yeah, let's just cut to the chase and get it scheduled now, please. So with all of that as an introduction ramble, people are like, Mike, please be quiet so we can listen to Melissa talk. We don't want to hear you talk. I would love to open it up with the first question, which was the one that was rattling in my skull when I was listening to you talk about what you do. Of all the ways to teach people mindfulness, how do you use chocolate to teach people mindfulness?
Yes, Michael. First, I want to say thank you because I appreciate compliments that are my kind of compliments, right? There's like love languages, and then I feel like there's a compliment language. And for me, it's being seen for who I am and how I want to show up in the world. So I greatly appreciate you saying that. I have something that is in my Notion software, lots of, you know, meeting notes, all the things that belong there. And then I have one extra, which is affirmation document. And every time that somebody shares with me what they saw me doing that I was doing on purpose, I put it in there just as a reminder. Personally, I've never had to go back and use it. Initially, I set it up so that, you know, if I'm having a bad day or I'm feeling like, I want to quit, I'm going to go back and read it. I've never actually gone through and read them yet, but I do constantly put more and more in. So thank you for adding to that.
Thank you.
As far as chocolate mindfulness, I'm a licensed master social worker. I was trained at the University of Wisconsin-Madison to help people, first to build rapport, to help people build their confidence, and to do that in a one-on-one or group setting, small group setting typically. But what I found when I interned through the United Way and when I interned at the state capitol was that I really, really enjoyed making a difference on a larger scale. And so I did start my career doing counseling with small groups and one-on-one sessions. But what I found throughout was that people really gravitated towards mindfulness. They wanted to practice it. And yet they either felt like it was not achievable because it wasn't easy to do, you know, hitting the ground running, or they just didn't know where to start. So when I thought about habit stacking, when you want to do something new, create this new habit that you know is going to be good for you, but you want it to stick, you reward yourself, right? So that's how chocolate mindfulness was born. We wanted to help people reward themselves with something tangible that I consider a love language, chocolate. It's maybe they'll amend the book one day, right? And begin with a meditation practice, couple minutes. As simple, as simplistic as, just being present while you're brushing your teeth, right? You could start there. Certain clients, right? They want to focus on the personal hygiene all the way up to, you know, executives that I work with that are interested in having a better work-life harmony or better boundaries, whatever it is, do something for 2 minutes and then gift yourself a small piece of chocolate. That's how chocolate mindfulness was born.
Very cool. And the thing that I like about it too is, and maybe I'm going in the wrong direction here for just a second, is I feel like chocolate is one of those things that sometimes is looked at as like a vice. So it could be, in theory, negative. Now, I would never say that. My mom raised me with a really nice sweet tooth, so chocolate is on the good side for me, I promise. But it's taking something that some people could look at as negative potentially, but I love the phrase habit stacking, using it as a reward for doing something positive to get that mechanism going so we continue to do the positive things. I think that's fantastic. What is it about chocolate specifically that helps us practice being present?
So chocolate can highlight or enact our olfactory senses, right? So there's the smell, there's the texture, there's the flavor, there's excitement that comes around chocolate. And of course, when we eat it, it releases some feel-good chemicals in your brain, which is pretty nice. People like that quick hit, right? And that's why people gravitate towards it for celebrations, for when they're feeling down, when they want to remember a loved one. I know so many people, when we do our sessions, they'll say, you know, there was this one chocolate cake that my grandmother made. And anytime I want to remember her, I bake it, or anytime I taste it, you know, it brings back all of these memories. So there's stories that go with chocolate and chocolate baked goods, right? And so that's an incredible way to break bread without making a whole spread with appetizer to dessert. You could just skip to the chocolate. And people smile when they answer the question, what's your chocolate of choice? I always ask that. I do come from a background in drug and alcohol counseling, so it kind of spins off of that. But I do ask, what is your chocolate of choice? And people light up, or they have a really strong reaction. They're like, oh, I hate chocolate, right? Which I love. I'm fine with that too. But you quickly get to people sharing stories about the first time they tried it and, you know, what they didn't like about it, or the first time they tried it and what they love about it and how they use it as a ritual now or a routine throughout their day. So that's one part. The other part is what we find is that there's candy, right, that you can get in a vending machine in the gas station. And then there's chocolate that's made by chocolatiers and chocolate makers. And there's this full spectrum of what people have experienced and what they haven't yet experienced. So I love delighting people when they try a really good piece of quality chocolate. I love telling them the story behind the chocolate, because no chocolate is born on a shelf. So knowing that there was a farmer that planted the seed and cared for that cacao, and even knowing that chocolate comes from cacao for some, is mind-blowing. And so from there, we are able to connect the story of even the company, if they're giving back to restoring waterways, or you know, giving money to fund schools. There's really, really amazing small chocolate businesses that are doing astronomical impact in the world. And so that factor that you're talking about, that, you know, potential guilt factor, goes out the window when you know that by eating this piece of chocolate, you're giving back for the greater good. And also it's, you know, doesn't have a list of 20 ingredients. It's quality chocolate that you're putting into your body. And lastly, I have never had an attorney or a doctor knock on my office door giving me a cease and desist letter, because I'm not saying eat a king size piece, right? I'm talking about a small piece of chocolate.
And I think that's so many amazing things you just talked about to touch on, but that small piece, it gets back to the thought of moderation, which is probably helpful in many aspects in many of our lives. This could be a whole other theme for another conversation, but using a high quality reward that not only trips those feel good chemicals, but invigorates our senses and serves as a small immediate reward to help build long-term habits to fuel long-term growth. Like now when you're putting it all together, the story of what you're doing now seems to have more depth, more value, more potential. And I'm not going to insult any off-the-shelf chocolate, because God knows in my life I've spent way too much money. In fact, well, I won't go into brands or whatever, but probably 15 years ago, I was working for a client, and every time I would submit my like food receipts, there was always one particular candy that I would get every time I got on the airplane. And they finally asked me, like, do you get this every time you get on an airplane? I'm like, I think I actually do, now that you mentioned it. So things have changed. I haven't done that in a very long time. But I also think that, to your point, it's easier to have it in moderation because it is such high quality. So you appreciate it more, and knowing the backstory behind it leads to the appreciation, which enhances the enjoyment, and all of these things that are true really for anything we do. I know you mentioned coming from the background of drugs and alcohol, but this could be true for somebody who really appreciates fine wine, or somebody who really appreciates craft beer, or somebody who really appreciates a well-cooked meal with fine ingredients and, you know, once a month or whatever, they go to this special restaurant with their spouse to eat there. So it's the same thing. And I love how you have strung them all together. And I'm glad that we got to talk through that question, because so now I'm kind of showing a little bit behind the scenes for people, but I don't know if you remember, but when we spoke the first time we met, when we were standing out in the hall together, and I asked you a similar question and you started talking about experiencing your senses, all my geek bells and whistles went off, because as an interviewer, that is one of the things we were trained on to help people access memories that they were saying that they couldn't. So if somebody is saying, I can't remember, well, hopefully we don't get there to begin with. There's better tools. But for the purpose of conversation, somebody is acting as if they can't remember. Maybe they're really struggling. Well, if I go the route of what were they smelling? What were they seeing? What were they tasting? What were they feeling? If I go some of these other routes, I can pick a different road in their brain to help get them to something that they otherwise felt like they couldn't get to. And when you're doing the same thing essentially with chocolate to help people find mindfulness, I always geek out on like unintended or unexpected parallel lines. Like here we are in different aspects doing things that are in a lot of ways quite different, but there's similar methods that we're capitalizing on to get there. You talked about rituals and routines. Mm-hmm. For people who are looking to create a practice of mindfulness and experience the benefits, because you're right, it is not, and I'm speaking like I know how to do it, which clearly I don't, but it's not an immediate gratification. Hey, look, I did the thing. Now I'm done. It's a process, and it's probably a lifelong process. So how important are creating rituals and routines on the journey of finding mindfulness?
I find it integral. And I want to challenge what you said, because you said it might not be easy, it might be lifelong, right? For me, when I ask people, do you know how to meditate? You know, do you practice mindfulness? They shy away from it most of the time, right? No, I know there's a whole magazine about it. I know I should, right? They start shooting on themselves, but they're not doing it. And when I ask them, do you know how to eat a piece of chocolate? People are super confident, right? Of course I know how to eat a piece of chocolate.
I can handle that.
I can handle that, right? And so that moment of me saying, well, if you know how to eat a piece of chocolate, you know how to be mindful. And when I give them my business card, which as you've seen is a piece of chocolate, right then and there, we have an experience. And so they open it up. Either they, you know, turn on the My Retreat app right then and there and do a meditation, or they have me present, so I'll walk them through it. And during that time where they are, like you said, using all of their senses to savor this piece of chocolate, I see a shift. I see, you know, the shoulders drop. I see their body language change and soften almost, and just be more open and approachable, which is what is necessary for many conversations and open communication, right? From the bedroom to the boardroom. And what I would say is that it is so important for them to have that moment, because then I ask them the follow-up question of, while you were eating that chocolate, were you worrying about the past or thinking about the future? And they're like, wait a minute. No. And I have a big meeting coming up, or, you know, I just got off this call that was really stressful. So I said, okay, bottle that up, that remember that, that memory, and know that you can take that with you anytime, anywhere, and nobody knows that you're meditating. You don't need a Zafu cushion, although I have, you know, plenty. And if that's your thing, do it, right? But you don't need to be sitting in the most memorable one that comes to mind is like the Lion King and Rafiki, right? You don't have to be sitting in a position with legs crossed and, you know, palms up to have that moment. And once you recognize that, it's a stepping stone. So some people stop there and they tell me, you know, all the time, I was speaking in front of this large conference. So right before I got on stage, I had this moment and I had a chocolate mindfulness experience, and it helped me to just level set and be grounded. Or there are people who reach back out and they're like, then I went on this silent retreat for X number of days. And all of those paths are the right paths because that's what they needed for themselves.
It probably is an important point for people who are listening, that we all have our own routes and our own stories, and what's perfect for you might not be perfect for me or somebody else. But that doesn't mean there's not a way or multiple ways that this wouldn't work for us. I love how you talked about someone was about to go up on stage, so they just had like a chocolate mindfulness moment. Is the word that I wrote down, I am taking notes while you're talking, because I think this is awesome. The note that I wrote down was when you said the word savor. Because I feel like, And I've asked multiple, I'll ask you again. I think you already answered it. So if the answer is, Mike, I already answered. You probably did. But just in case there's something else you wanted to say, I've asked a bunch of people, like, what do you really feel like it means to be present? And the answers kind of vary, but there's themes, right? When you use the word savor, to me, my brain immediately aligned that with presence. Because if I'm savoring something, that I'm appreciating it for all that I can understand of what it is right now, all the little nuances, tastes, smells, experiences, everything you talked about earlier. So I'm tuning everything else out. And now if I need to have that moment before I have a tough conversation, before I go up on stage, before I walk into a board meeting, before XYZ, whatever, if I can have a little piece of fine chocolates, as I can, I have eaten your business card. Well, I didn't. My wife did. So my wife, how many times has somebody said that in your life? My wife ate your business card and she said it was amazing. But so that quality, now you're having that mindful moment. And even if, I'm guessing, even if that is your moment, then you're already further ahead than other people. And what I personally love about that, because you didn't ask, is that a lot of times I think people have their like routines. Well, if I'm going to give a presentation today, these are all the things I need to do before to make sure I'm in the right mindset. But then life happens, right? The kids don't get out of bed on time. You get stuck in traffic. There was a huge line at the coffee shop, whatever. And so now we're feeling flustered before we got to go on stage. But if someone just has to say, I just need a bite of chocolate. And then I have that sensory experience and then I feel good. Everything could have been a mess before. And now that 30 seconds of eating a bite on chocolate while somebody is reading your bio, which might be the most embarrassing thing for any speaker, then you have that moment. I love it. I absolutely love it. I started rambling, so I'm going to shut myself off. Is there anything else about being present that you didn't talk about before and you wanted to add?
Absolutely. So one of our practices in the chocolate mindfulness experience, it's not all eating chocolate, right? We don't, for an hour.
Then I'm out.
I know. But that's the reward. So the other pieces, one of those other pieces is gratitude journaling. And I consider that an experience to savor as well, because we're thinking about and writing down the people, places, and things that we're currently grateful for that begin with each of the letters in one word. So let's say the word was savor, right? You'd write down S-A-V-O-R vertically and then identify the people, places, and things you're grateful for. And you're ending up with, I'm going to finger count, S-A-V-O-R, right? Five words. Five words that you're grateful for. And what we find is that it's similar to the mindful eating experience, because people aren't being asked just what are you thankful for? And typically we say, you know, family, friends, my home, you know, music, the usual, which are important. And when you have to think of something that starts with the letter S that you're grateful for, you stop and you think, okay, S, right? And you start thinking of people whose names begin with S and places that you've been that begin with that letter and things that you're grateful for. And for me, sailing comes up. I haven't been sailing since I was 16 years old, but I did it for 8 summers in a row, all summer long, and it's like a milestone in my life to be able to go out solo in a sailboat and feel like, I'm giving another Disney reference, but like that Moana moment of I'm ruling the ocean right now, right? Which is never the case, but there's this feeling of freedom and confidence when you're on a boat and you're the captain, right? So I'll just pull it all back to say that each of the elements of our chocolate mindfulness experience, including the chocolate, but not exclusive to, have to do with presence. And there are 5 of them, right? I won't go through them all right now, but the idea is at the end of our experience, whether it's on the app, you know, in our workshops or in Grand Cayman, right, on the chocolate mindfulness retreat, we always say at the end of practicing all 5, which ones resonated and which ones didn't, because you take what you need and leave what you don't, right? And I've also say, if all 5 of them didn't work for you, that's great, because you know that you're that many steps closer to finding what will work. Now, in these last 8 years of doing chocolate mindfulness, I've never met a person who said none of the 5 worked for them, but every single element has to do with presence. And it's something that people are searching for. And I can tell you, as a licensed social worker who worked for a handful of years, I think it was almost 5 years, working with a population of people who are diagnosed with schizophrenia and schizoaffective disorder. The people that I worked with in that capacity were the most mindful. I could have a whole 30-minute session with somebody sitting on a curb because it was a community treatment. So wherever they wanted to meet is where we met. I've had sessions in libraries, at Dairy Queen, and like I said, on a curb, right? With this individual just looking at the sky for 30 minutes and admiring the clouds and talking about how he could be anywhere in the world and he'd be looking at that same sky and being super, super present in the moment and talking about the colors and the textures of the clouds. And during that time, he's not experiencing voices. He's not, you know, having certain ideations that are upsetting to him or potentially to the people around him if he acts on them, right? He was super, super laser focused on the beauty that surrounds him. And not only do I find that with our clients, that outside of that, because I no longer do, you know, client one-on-one sessions, but I maintain my licensure, what I find is people want to get to that point. When they think about, when they're visualizing where they're most calm, most present, it's typically by the water somewhere or in the mountains, right? Those are the two that come up time and time again. And you don't actually have to physically be there to experience it. You can imagine being there, and it's just as powerful and just as grounding and presence evoking as being there. And so I just wanted to give that shout out to certain clients that I've worked with in the past who just hone it. And then that opposite end of people who I hear, you know, oh, I need to go on a 1 month silent retreat, or I need to start yoga, or, you know, they're saying what they need to do when they could just pause and be present. It's available to us anytime, anywhere.
So you just gave me the world's like biggest choose your own adventure. I had a follow-up question on leadership. I had a follow-up question on presence. Then we're going to talk about sailing, which, by the way, I have a young son, so Disney references are still good with me probably for a couple of years. Seen Moana. And now it's the schizophrenic clients. Like, I think we have four. Can you clear your calendar for the rest of the morning, please? Because we got a lot to talk about. I would love to go back to the conversation with the schizophrenics. I can only imagine how eye-opening and even educational those were for you. And I'm in no way trying to make light of or pass off the seriousness of the condition of the people that you were there to serve and to help. And even the fact that it was community-based and you were meeting them where they wanted or needed to be, there's a huge lesson there. Like, how many people could benefit from, just because you're the leader doesn't mean people need to come in, sit down, and shut the door. Like, if we're really trying to generate a positive outcome in somebody else's life, meeting them where they need to be met, both like actually and metaphorically, can go a long way. What did working with schizophrenics teach you to make you a better communicator with those of us who don't suffer from, at least I don't think I do, don't suffer from that specific diagnosis or related diagnoses?
That's a question I've never been asked, so I'm so grateful to answer. What I found was that every single person with the same diagnosis was different, right? So number one, you can try to put somebody in a box, but they're going to break out of it, right? They're going to be who they are if they're comfortable around you. So rapport building is super, super important at all times with anyone, but specifically with that population. And so that's one thing, is it doesn't matter what the DSM-5 says, that's what gets them the treatment and the support, and they're still a whole human, and a diagnosis doesn't define who they are. And what I loved the most is that it was the foundation of that particular program that I work for. So what it said was vocational training, for instance, is key to success. So not just get this person a job and, you know, if they're working, they'll be busy and they won't think about the other things that are bothering them. No, it was, let's say this person comes to you with no high school education, for instance. and they say, I want to be an astronaut. You say, wow, I love the stars, right? Which I do. Honesty always, right? But I love the stars. Wouldn't it be amazing to go up there? Yeah, yeah. And they tell, you know, what it would be like to be up in the stars. So the follow-up question is, what do you think it would take to get up there? You know, oh, well, you know, astronauts need a suit. You're right. So just start writing down, listening, all the things that astronauts need. And then, all right, now talk to me about the education piece, right? You want to be an astronaut. What do you have to do to work there? You know, I don't know. What, are you open to looking into it together? Absolutely. So now we're on the computer looking up, right, what it takes to become an astronaut and breaking it down to bite-sized pieces, which is what people need no matter what walk of life they come from. We need to break things down to palatable bite-sized pieces. For some, that's larger. For some, that's smaller than others. But when it comes down to it, the first step was typically them saying, you know what, I should probably get my GED. Now, Michael, if I started that conversation with, you don't have a high school degree, I've never met an astronaut, to full disclosure, but I've never, you know, read about an astronaut who didn't have a degree. And how are you in science? You know, you're putting up all these barriers for people to get where they want to go. They're going to close up so quick or just turn and walk away because they have autonomy, right? I don't physically keep people with me. You have to connect on a level that makes sense and meet them where they're at, right? You want to be an astronaut? I want that for you. Let's figure out how we can work on that together. And that's what I've taken with me beyond that position and that role to every other area in my personal and professional life.
I'm glad you circled back around to that like initial response. When you were walking through that, that's amazing. It's your training, it's your background, it's all of those things. Probably a lot of reflective who you are as a person underneath all of that. But that is a skill set and a perspective that in my perhaps limited experience, I've come across very few, more than I've met astronauts, but very few people that have that skill set, not to just say, dude, you can't be an astronaut. Like, I want to be an astronaut. I want to play center field for the Boston Red Sox. That was never going to happen. Like, I think for so many of us who are busy or in maybe an elevated position, maybe that's parent, maybe that's teacher, maybe that's manager, maybe that's coach, maybe it's therapist, whatever it is, to just the initial reaction to shut that down. But to your point, when you shut somebody down, you lose them. And there is no harm. Like, you're not misguiding somebody. You're not giving them delusions of grandeur by saying, awesome, being an astronaut would be super cool. What do you think that takes? And then working around to the education piece. And if the upshot of that is somebody goes out and actually gets their GED, then that by not saying, dude, you will never be an astronaut, just made their life instrumentally better. Is instrumentally better? Whatever the right word is. Like, they are now much better off because they went and got their GED from that conversation. So whether you're a parent, whether you're a manager, whether you're working with a client who's got an insane idea, accepting doesn't mean agreeing. So by accepting that, you're not saying, I agree with you. Someday you're going to be an astronaut. You're accepting what's important to them right now to help eventually lead them to where they need to be. That was stellar. Yes, that was a pun intended on the star reference, but that was amazing. You mentioned the importance of building rapport. That's a common topic that we talk about here a lot, but I've never asked somebody who had to work with schizophrenics about building rapport. Coming from the world of investigative interviewing, we're building rapport with people who generally aren't going to trust us at the start of the conversation, and understandably so, because if we're just going to use the simplest of examples, they did something they're not supposed to, there's consequences. They know I'm probably here to figure that out, so those consequences can happen, so there's some distrust. But I would imagine dealing with somebody who's schizophrenic, that distrust is likely stronger, deeper, can fluctuate depending on where they are right now today, based on their medication, based on previous interactions with people who they deem to be in similar roles. So I'm going to guess, having zero experience, that trying to build rapport with somebody who's schizophrenic equates to trying to build rapport with perhaps the least trusting audience or among the least trusting audiences. How did you work to develop rapport in that specific context?
So first of all, the reason why I chose that particular program to work for is because we had petty cash. And there's this amazing image of a magazine that my grandmother, who's also she's a professor emeritus from Cornell. She's also a social worker by training. She's 99 years old. She has it up on her wall still to this day. And it's a picture of a cat at a giant table, like maybe 20 for 20 people, right? Everything you could ever imagine for a spread, maybe Thanksgiving dinner, whatever you celebrate.
Fine chocolate.
Probably, yes. And that cat has this thought bubble, and there's just an image of a fish skeleton. That's it, right? So somebody wanted to wow them. Somebody wanted to, you know, do this performative thing and say, oh, you can have everything you could ever want. But it seems from that image that nobody asked, what is it that you truly want, right? And so if you had just scrapped the whole table and brought that fish, right? when I go sailing and, you know, eat the fish, but leave the rest for this individual or this cat in the example, they would have felt like, wow, I'm being seen, I'm being heard, I'm being understood. And those are the three things that I had to constantly come back to is, does this person feel seen? Are they being heard? And are they saying to me, wow, you understand? And so when I recognized or observed any of those signs, I honed in on that. And that's what we were going to focus on during the conversation, because it's not about my timeline. It's not about my, you know, progress notes that I needed to submit, right? So those were the top three pieces. But there was a fourth, and it was absolutely to the level that I could, right? I never shared about, you know, my personal life, but transparency. So if I was asked a direct question, which could be considered provocative is a bit strong, but, you know, like combative, let's say, you know, you're only doing this job because you want to make a paycheck. Absolutely. Otherwise, I'd be volunteering. You're right. And I'm staying because X, Y, and Z, right? That's the reason why I took the job. That's the reason why I chose to be hired. But I could be anywhere, right? Anywhere else, but I choose to be here and I want to be working on this with you. And then they'd pause and be like, usually people answer that question a lot different. Like, no, I love working with you, right? This is what I'm, you know, whatever they would say. It didn't help, but it does help to just show your humanity and show that I have needs, wants, and desires, and one of them is being fulfilled by having this job. And you get to hire and fire me, right? In social work, if a person told me, which never happened, but if a person said, I no longer want to work with you, I would need to, you know, give that caseload to somebody else because it's about them, not about me. But being open and upfront about that, I think that was really beneficial to building the rapport that we're talking about. But going back to those initial three points, that again, like you said, is something that I don't think I learned in school. I don't think that it's just a part of who I am and who I aspire to be, and something that I take into every sales conversation, right? Every retreat that I lead, it's universal.
And it should be universal. And I think, I'm guessing your grandmother might've had a little bit to do with this too, as you learned along the way. But it should be universal, because as I was listening to some of the genius that I hope people picked up on, and I'll circle back to in what you were just saying, my first thought was, wow, she would have made a great interrogator. Well, wait, she also would make a great leader, a great business development professional, I'm assuming a great mom, like all of these other things, because that approach applies all across the board. Like, you are truly making it about somebody else. In order for me to be successful, and I have no doubt you want it to be successful as a social worker, I've got to 100% frame this around what the other person needs. Because if I frame it around what I think I need to do to be successful, here's a sailboat analogy that I can't back up, I'm going to take us off course. And I don't want to go off course. So I've got to truly make this about the other person. And you mentioned it. It's not on my timeline. It's not based. The notes that I need to take will take care of themselves. They will get on the paper eventually. So let's not prioritize those. Let's prioritize the other person's experience. The way you answered that question with transparency, that's when I had the thought, oh, wow, she would have made a great interrogator. Because when people challenge you like that, it's like they're testing, will you be calm, but will you be honest with me? Because I would imagine, and again, I have no experience with this, somebody who, I'll use schizophrenic, I couldn't be further unlicensed or unqualified to make this following comment, but they've probably been involved in a system where they were hopefully / allegedly being helped or treated by people and felt along the way that some to most to maybe many weren't actually helping them. So their BS detectors are constantly on full power. So that you're only doing this for the paycheck is there. It's like they're shooting across the bow. Mm-hmm. I am now activating my BS detector. And if you give them the answer, no, I'm here because I really care about you. Maybe you do, but that hits their BS detector. When you say, yeah, I got a family to take care of, dude. Now, like, oh, wow, she was just honest with me. Now you have a greater level of their focus and attention. You just passed their test. And now you can say, I'm staying because, and now they're actually listening. So that was absolute genius. And again, applies across the board. I don't care if you're selling, if you're leading, if you're coaching, if you're parenting, it applies across the board. But I also loved how you said, and I'm paraphrasing, so if I screw this up, tell me. They need to feel seen, heard, and understood. But we only know that when they say, you understand me. Right. So I can't look at you and say, I understand what it must feel like. Because A, I likely don't. And B, even if I come close, if you don't trust me, you're going to immediately think or say, no, you don't. And now I've blown rapport completely up. If you verbalize you understand me, perfect. But even if you nod your head, if you smile, if your shoulders come down, if you do other things that shows you feel that, then good. I'm headed in the right direction. So the genius of, and there were others that I'm probably forgetting, but the genius of those little examples, I hope, isn't skipping past people because it applies in every single conversation that we have. That was fantastic.
Thank you. You did great in paraphrasing.
The big danger, like you go to any like college class on, I don't even like really saying the term, but active listening, it's like paraphrase. Okay, walk on thin ice and let me know how it goes. Because sometimes paraphrasing can go real well and sometimes it can blow up in your face.
Michael, I feel seen and heard. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's the goal. You mentioned sailing again in that. So I'm truly like fascinated with working with schizophrenics, but to try to loop in some of the other things that you said as well with the limited time we have today. You mentioned sailing and eating what you needed off the fish and giving the rest back to the earth or the water or the other animals, however it goes. Much like when you mentioned working with schizophrenics, I thought to myself, my goodness, she must have learned amazing lessons about communicating with other people through that work that I couldn't understand. And we probably just barely drug our fingernail across the surface of that. When you mentioned sailing by yourself for however many of those 8 summers when you were young, my thought was, wow, that must have taught her more about herself than I could understand. And I tile that all the way back to my first impression of you when I felt a sincere level of calm confidence that I don't get from many people. And I would imagine if you can survive on the ocean by yourself for weeks, months, or whatever, that does a lot for your perspective and self-confidence in life as you move forward. Like, oh, you're trying to get under my skin? Well, you're not a thunderstorm in the middle of the ocean, so try harder. But I would like to ask you this question only to the degree that you're comfortable sharing. What did the time that you spent alone on the ocean teach you about yourself that has made you so effective with what you do now communicating with others?
Being out on the open water, first of all, there's just this sense of unlimited possibilities, right? So you get to choose your direction, right? You choose your own adventure. That part is incredibly empowering. What was one of my greatest takeaways was knowing and having experience that inevitably capsizing can happen, right? From day one, we got into the boat right? And we capsized it. That was the first thing that you do, right? So it wasn't, oh, this thing could happen. I wonder, you know, will I get hit by the boom? You know, all these things that could go wrong. It wasn't that. It was, you're going to get in, you're going to experience this, and then you're going to keep going because it's going to happen again, right? And that piece for me is so important to my values that I have to this day, where I've thrown failure parties, right? I've thrown failure parties because I aimed so high that I didn't reach a goal and I got in a really good place, right? But because I set that goal for myself and because I didn't reach it all the way, I was going to shout that from the rooftops. And guess what? When I did, not only did people come out the woodworks from my network and even extended network that I didn't know people considered to be in my circle, right? People came to me and said, you know, that was brave. That was courageous. That was, you know, even just saying that you failed is hard to do. So people want to know, you know, how, why, what, all the things. But I got more support from it because people are like, they can see themselves in that human experience, and they want to be a part of the community. They want to help build my retreat even more. And they showed up and in ways that were unimaginable. So I would say that is the greatest takeaway that I've had from sailing.
That's fantastic. And you know, the whole, like, just get through it, it's going to happen again. Again, terrible paraphrasing on my part, but so we practice capsizing the boat. We know it's going to happen. We can work through it. I love how you said the feeling of unlimited possibilities. I feel like I was guessing something similar, but from the opposite perspective, like, this is so big and I'm so small, it's humbling. But you looked at it the other way, that this is so big, there's unlimited possibilities. Like, anything can happen. I can make anything happen.
Yeah, that's the feeling.
That's amazing. I've only ever been in one sailboat, and I was not the driver. I was one of the beverage consumers, and I had nothing to do with what direction it was going. So I can't relate, but I can imagine. Yeah. As we circle all the way back, I'm trying to keep it on the clock. I want to be very respectful of your time because you with the schizophrenic thing alone, you gave me like 101 questions that I wanted to ask. But earlier when you were talking about mindfulness, which was the initial purpose of the conversation, you talked about mindfulness helping us be more open and approachable. And I feel like for people who are in any type of quote unquote leadership position, again, whether it's at work, whether it's in the community, whether it's at home, whether it's whatever, being open and approachable can be key to our success and our ability to connect with others. But it can create this like unnecessary sense of vulnerability, whether it is as simple as I don't want someone to infringe on my time because I'm busy, or I don't want to have to admit that I don't know something or whatever it is. So how have you seen leaders employ the practice of mindfulness to improve their approachableness, if that's a word now, in order to help be more successful in their lives and businesses?
What we find is that, let's say it's a boardroom, right? You have a board meeting every quarter, every month, whenever you have it. There are people who have been in business, either running the business or working for the business, for decades. And when they see that come up on their calendar, they just say to themselves, and I know this because I've said it out loud, right? They say to themselves, this is going to be just like last time, just like all the other times. Nothing's going to change, right? They have this stuck mentality. And what we help people to discover and experience is if you eat the same piece of chocolate every single time, right? Every single day, you're going to have a different experience every single time. And so when you start with something so small, where not only are you going to have a different experience and a different aha moment, but your colleagues are going to have a different experience. And you witness that when you go through our workshop because they're all having the same piece of chocolate. But one person is saying, oh, today, you know, I hate dark chocolate. I never thought I would have tasted it because I'm here. I decided to try something new. I was open to it. And now I just learned I love dark chocolate, right? Because it's a good quality dark chocolate. Or for people who do it time and again, our clients who do it monthly or quarterly, they'll say, you know, when I was savoring that piece of chocolate, my tongue was, you know, touching the roof of my mouth. I haven't really noticed that there are ridges on the roof of my mouth, right? I haven't noticed that in years, but I talk all the time, right? My tongue is touching there all the time. I'm just not noticing it. And so we pause and we start there, right? One, you're being mindful, right? You're being mindful of the textures in your mouth, right? What else could you have missed? Because you're there with your face all day long with your head, right? But you missed something. And so is it possible that you can take this beginner's mindset to the boardroom? And when you're there, consider the possibility that something could be different. And when they do that and they circle back, they're like, Melissa, I went in not thinking that so-and-so was going to interrupt me again and this was going to happen. These self-fulfilling prophecies that happen, right? And instead, they're like, you know, it opened my mind to an innovative thought that I shared, or I was better able to listen to my colleagues share their creative idea, and now we're moving forward in that trajectory. So that's one example, and I'll give just one more. Executive women who come with me to the Grand Cayman Chocolate Mindfulness Retreat, some of them have already been to Grand Cayman. So typically it's like cruise ship, right? Maybe 4 hours, or they came with their family, and there's a lot of responsibility that goes with that. But when they come as themselves and they come with the intention of summoning bold confidence or building bold boundaries, it's a whole different experience. And the transformation is phenomenal. Again, I know this because we hire a third party, right, to do the focus group and the surveys, and, you know, shout out to Spaley Solutions. What I want to say about that is, though, it stays with them. That learning, that understanding, that new truth is something that they can take with them, with or without chocolate, to other situations, other points in their life where they're then able to be present and open to the possibility of, but what if? And I already said that's the last one, but I'm going to give just one more. There was a woman on an airplane with me, and I told her about chocolate mindfulness, and she said, oh, that sounds great. You know, she downloaded the app right there. It was fabulous. But then I told her about a partner that I have, Iambic, which is AI shoes. You just scan your feet. They send them up the information to Portugal, send it back a pair of shoes that are just made completely for you. If I'm going to go one more time with this Disney reference, like Cinderella fitting pair of shoes, right? My words, not theirs. But I told her it's $550 for these pair of shoes. You will never have another experience like this pair of shoes. And she said, wow, you know, ideally in her mind, she was saying that would be incredible. I have this discomfort in my feet. When I do a body scan, you know, I notice that my feet don't feel good. But she said, but what if it doesn't work? And that's a valid question, right? What if it doesn't work? Now, I didn't tell her, you know, they have a guarantee and like 97 and 98% success rate. But like, if it doesn't work, send it back and get another pair. But my answer to her was just reflective. Like, what if it doesn't work? She was like, well, all these things could go wrong, right? And then I said, okay, and what if it was the greatest experience your feet have ever had? And your feet thank you. And now when you're standing in front of this audience that you're telling me you're about to go speak in front of, you're not thinking about discomfort or pain. You're thinking about how you want to be perceived and how you're going to engage this audience. And that for her was enough for her to be like, yeah, you're right. And those moments, those aha moments of, but what if, yes, what if it works, right? What if there are these amazing opportunities to explore that work out for you? Those are the transformative moments that our clients have, whether we're working with partners or they're coming to the Cayman Islands with us.
Again, every time I'm starting to take notes, I'm like, I gotta write that down too. I love how you use the phrase new truth. And I think in today's, we're not going to get into it, but in today's, well, let's just call it media universe, truth can be looked at a bunch of different ways and called a bunch of different things, true, false, blah, 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 blah. but there is room for a new truth. That doesn't mean the past was false, but there can be a new truth of how we see ourselves, how we see situations, how we interact, the standards that we hold ourselves to, the standards that we expect for others, how we react to situations. So I love that concept of a new truth. If we use mindfulness, particularly chocolate mindfulness, maybe through an app or a retreat in order to get there, but we can have this new truth. And if we had so much more time, now I want to dive into bold boundaries and bold confidence and what that can mean and how we get there. But that can be a new truth. And that can be a new truth that guides who we are and what we do. And if we think about this potentially as a journey to establish that new and better truth for who we are and who we can be, and to steal from your perspective, how we can help others to get there, then we can be happier, more fulfilled, more present, on and on and on. If I don't wrap myself up now, there's a serious likelihood that you're not going to get lunch today. So I can't thank you enough for all that you've shared and dived into with us today. For the people that are listening. Oh, and real quick, shout out to everybody that checked the roof of their mouth for ridges when you gave that example, because I did it and I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that was like, wait a minute, how many ridges do I have on the mouth? So before I forget to ask, for people that are listening, go, wait a minute, what's this app that I keep hearing about? And wait a minute, what's this retreat that I keep hearing about? And this has been great. So where do I connect with her and how do I learn more? For people that want to connect with you and learn more about your business, what you do and what you offer, the stage is yours. Please, well, I guess it has been the whole time, but now specifically, please tell us where, when, and how can people connect with you?
Absolutely. So even for people who don't want to do chocolate mindfulness, we have phenomenal chocolate through the My Retreat app. So you can download the
free app. I'll vouch.
Yeah, download the free app. We have daily 2-minute meditations that you pair with chocolate as your tangible reward. And of course, we have that chocolate subscription available through the app. Then we have the workshop, which is team building using chocolate, not trust falls. Virtual or in-person experience for 1 hour that has every element of what's in the My Retreat app, but you get me in person or virtually. And you also happen to get a pair of iambic shoes if you're the leader, just saying. So if you were intrigued by those shoes, we throw them in as your tangible reward for supporting and investing in your team, right, and in yourself. And then there's the Grand Cayman Retreat currently for executive women in conversations with teams, right? Bigger teams, sales teams. But right now we bring 7 women to Grand Cayman, where my family calls home, to summon bold boundaries through daily masterminds, adventure, and cuisine. And of course, a private chef. We go to the Crystal Caves and the Bioluminescence Tour. And the next one coming up is December 14th through 19th of 2025.
Very cool. I will put links to all of that. I don't know. Is there a registration link for the retreat available or like a website for it? Okay. If I can't find it, I'll message you for it directly, but I'll make sure that I have links to all of that directly in the show notes so people don't have to go digging around. They can find them right there.
Amazing. I appreciate you.
When we logged in this morning, I told you it was great to see you and I was excited for this conversation, and both those things were true. This went well beyond anything that I expected to talk about with you. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your dedication to others and all that you're doing and sharing it with us today. I really appreciate it. I'm so happy that we met and I look forward to continuing the conversation.
My pleasure. Take good care.
You as well. Thank you. Melissa, thank you for a fantastic conversation. I wish we had another hour to continuing to walk through some of the doors that you opened for us. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for all that you shared today. So many great ideas. I love the concept of just stepping back and asking, what could I have missed? There's always something. What else could I have missed? I also really appreciated how you illustrated steps we can take to truly meet people where they need to be met. That premise is discussed all the time, but you gave us very tactical, specific ways and examples of how to do it. Thank you so much for that. You talked about encouraging, not obstructing people, especially when we're asking them to open up with us. I thought that was super important. And your failure party sounded pretty cool too. Great conversation. Thank you so much, Melissa. I truly appreciate it. And thank you to everybody who took the time to join us for another episode. We really appreciate you being here week after week. Thank you so much. While you're online, take a quick second. Please subscribe to the show,
share it with your friends, like it, leave us your feedback, give it a rating. We really appreciate it. Thank you so very much. And of course, before you get off the internet today, please take just a second and check out our sponsors. Head over to humantel.com, look at all of their resources, check out all of their online training, decide which one's best for you, and then enter the code INCOHESIVE25 for 25% off their best-in-class online training to recognize when people's emotions are shifting based on changes in their facial expressions and nonverbal communication. For the professional interviewers, please go check out certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can learn more about both the International Association of Interviewers and the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. That's your career path. I highly recommend you go over there and check it out. And while you're online, please check out inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to custom facilitate for their senior leaders, sales teams, HR teams, and more to teach them how to uncover hidden value in all of their high impact conversations. We really appreciate you being here week after week. Thank you so very much. Look forward to seeing you here next time. Please stay safe and take care of each other. Thank you.